I think, when I explained to him about it, he just told me to go do that. Just to go about my business. He probably knew that I had a cut and that would be a good way to cover it. But I think I told him a lot about animals and plants, cause he was interested in that, what they look like and what they feel like, how they live and eat, how big they are. AC, did you draw any pictures for your friend? VH, I think I described them verbally, but he could understand them. He might have had pictures that he showed me and I would say, yes, they look like that. No, they don't look like that. And I would describe them textually, too. What they felt like, what their fur felt like or their feathers or the leaves or whatever. I don't think I drew. I think I just described them. How many legs they had, you know. What kind of mouths they had. What kind of ears. What kind of eyes. One told him about lizards. There were lizards that lived down in the barn that were kind of cute and I told him about those. AC, what was your friend like? VH, curious. And a good listener. Had a sense of humor. And very patient. And very old and mature. One mentioned last time that when I asked how old he was he just said, very old. Which reminds me of my grandfather, but I had the sense that he didn't think I could understand how old he was. A.G. How tall was he? 7. Ah, I think he was about as tall as my uncle. A little bit shorter. My uncle is short, probably 5 feet, 5 inches or 6 inches. He was probably somewhere between 5 feet and 5 feet, 5 inches. And I think he was taller than the others, but only by an inch or two. Maybe a little bit more. The perspective of the kid, the person who carried me was shorter than an adult. Sort of the size of a big kid. And I think the impression that I have that I told you about the last time, about what the skin was like and stuff, I think now that that was the clothing they wore. I think they wore something to cover their skin, which I thought was them, but was really what they were wearing, like a soft, supple grey, almost swede-like space suits, to cover them. Not like the ones we wear, ones that were as smooth and close, fitting as their skin. And that I thought was them, but it wasn't. It was what they wore outside to protect themselves. Skin, fitting, and it was fairly thick but very soft and the texture of really fine leather, you know, like nice French leather shoes, really soft leather. Not suede, but soft kid. Grey and body temperature was not different than mine. Well, maybe it was different, but not so much that I felt cold or hot. You know, like you were touching a cold, blooded animal. Of course, it was a warm day and it may have adjusted to our temperature but it felt like something that wasn't cold. And, the head was simplified, as though the thing he wore over his face didn't have very many openings. I guess it had, I think, 2 eyes. But I think what I thought was like big eyes were probably just like glass surfaces or bubble surfaces to protect the eyes. I didn't think I saw them without their costumes on or what they really looked like. I think they just had little protective bubbles that let them see peripherally, but screened out the excess radiation or whatever they didn't want. And they were dark and I thought they had big, dark eyes, but I don't know that that's true. I think it was that it reflected a lot of sun. It seems to me our light was very bright for them, but on the other hand, inside their spaceship was very bright. So maybe it was just a different spectrum. The person that talked to me later from remote was the one I assumed carried me. But it might not have been. The one that carried me was the taller one. I don't remember, I think there were 3 people in all, but I'm not sure. Maybe 2 of them were outside. I think that's what it was. 2 of them were outside and I think I saw them when I got carried in. But I think they wanted to take off their costumes. So they went into a different part of the ship that they could talk to me from behind the wall. I do think I saw them before they did that, explain that to me. There was so much grey and their costumes were grey. But either they are grey or it has something to do with their spectrum. Maybe they're not color, sensitive, or, it seemed like the gray had a meaning to it, but either that was the color of the skin or it was a soothing color to their eyes, or something. The gray wasn't an accident or just somebody's color judgment. This is Virginia's first extensive description of the figures who carried her aboard the UFO. The details of their small 11 size and gray color closely echo the other descriptions we have heard, but one of her observations stands out as particularly subtle. She felt that her abductor's outer layer was not skin, but instead was some kind of gray skin, like fabric. It was as smooth and close, fitting as their skin. It was fairly thick but very soft, and the texture of really fine leather. Sergeant Charles Moody I, the reader will recall, said also that his captor's skin was whitish, gray and the face was almost like a mask. Emphasis mine. Even more to the point, Stephen Kilburn described what one of his abductors looked like from behind. I see the back of his head now, it's perfectly round. Ugly little thing. And I think there's a line. I don't know if that's skin on his head. A very, very faint line like a ripple, like a seam. Right down the middle. I can't tell if it's skin or something he has overhead. It fits well, though. The correspondences between Virginia's description of her captor's eyes and the other accounts are equally subtle. She said that their dark eyes were probably just like glass surfaces, or bubble surfaces to protect the eyes. I thought they had big, dark eyes, but I don't think that's true. Stephen described the way the eyes of his captor shone in the light from the landed UFO. I see the reflection, there's something really shiny coming off this character's eyes. It's almost like they're black and endless. Philip Osborne referred to his captor's eyes this way. I had the impression of their being solid, that it was almost a metallic plate or something. As Virginia's narrative resumes, she begins to speculate about her abductor's status and role. Even within the hypnotic trance, she is conscious that her impressions are intuitive guesses. The feeling that I have about it was that this person was someone senior enough in his own society to have quasi-official status. It would almost be like a retired emeritus professor who was doing research that he liked for his own interest, that he'd gotten someone to sponsor, so it was on an official basis. But it was almost like I was in a private yacht or a, it was definitely not like a military vehicle or a, like our space shuttle. It had a private quality about it that was very much his stamp rather than kind of an official government or an official diplomatic something. It was like he was indulging his personal interests and they were also being indulged for him by the society, and this is more the feeling that I have now when I try to think back about how I felt. Rather than necessarily something that I was aware of then, the things that he explained were like, this is a very interesting thing that I do. The way you'd explain your motivation to do basic research to a child. A.C., what did you call one him? Were you able to name him? V.H., what did I call him? Ern, it seems like he used I and we but, Ern, names, what did he call himself? I'll think about that. I don't remember. I think it was just you. A.C., how did you get his attention if you wanted to ask him something or say something? V.H., oh, the feeling that I had was that they were listening with bated breath to every word that I said and every thought that I thought. You know, the communication process was completely absorbing them, so I didn't need to get their attention. I had it constantly. A.C., was there anything else about this experience that you would like to tell me about? V.H., I'll think about it. It seems like there is. I think he asked how long we lived. I'm thinking more about the tone of the question that he asked me, the things he asked me about. He asked how long we lived and how long these different animals lived. And I told him that they had, how many offspring the chickens have, and I explained about eggs versus having your own babies, and how many people have, and how many different kinds of animals do. And I think I also explained to him about warm-blooded and cold-blooded animals, which I knew about, and I think I explained about nursing and how long animals live and plants, too. He was interested in plants, and, I think he asked me what plants eat and I told him they didn't eat anything, that they just lived in the air. And I think I explained to him about the seasons, and he asked about weather, too, and I don't think I knew very much about weather. I mean, I explained how it got cold and froze things, but I don't think I had very much sophisticated information about weather to tell him about the seasons and how hot it got in the summer and how cold it got in the winter. I told him it got cold enough in the winter that you could pour a glass of water out into the snow and it would freeze by the time it hit the ground. So I guess he could have figured out from that how cold it was. AC, did he show you anything in return for all this information you gave him? Did he share anything with you? Vi, he told me a lot. He explained a lot. I guess, when we talked about animals, he told me about different kinds of animals and different places. They are very different in different places. AC, did he describe them to you? VH, I think that when he asked me about animals and I said, apostrophe well, you know how animals are, and he'd say, no, and he'd explain to me patiently that they're not a certain way everywhere and that was why he was asking, because they're different in different places. I think he showed me something like slides as though, you know, like windows, so that there were different pictures that would, mostly they were pictures of star maps, you know. They would say, this is the star. I don't think I was able to follow exactly where things were in relationship. But I remember later on I started to look up at the stars. It was just at that time that I began to look up the stars and try to get a sense of distances and relationships, so he'd explain them to me. But I didn't really understand. I think most of the pictures he was trying to show me were where he came from and where he visited and where we were with relationship to that and, I don't know, I'll toy with that and maybe I can remember it, but maybe if I had studied astronomy it would have been familiar, but I haven't studied astronomy. I've always avoided astronomy because I knew that our astronomy doesn't reach far enough to where things are for it to be. Somehow, I guess he's from a long ways away or I wouldn't have this very distinct impression that I'm not going to find it in our astronomy. And yet he was trying to relate to me. He did one tell me about the Milky Way, you know. And tried to make a picture of how they were with relationship to our Milky Way, and I think that, he was, like, from a different Milky Way, which means that he must have been from a very, very, very long way away because that's a whole galaxy. So we were dealing in distances of galaxies, not just stars. AC. Did his maps look like the maps that we have now? VH. They did look like star maps. Yes, they looked like pictures of stars at night. They looked like slides of the heavens that you might show to somebody, but they had colors. I think they were color-coded for different kinds of stars. They had green, and mostly white and blue, quite a bit of blue, and some red and orange, yellow. The green was unusual, mostly white and blue, some orangey, red ones. What else did he show me that I might remember? I think he showed me so much that I can't, that I couldn't. There are places that have these kinds of animals and there were a whole lot of slides of things that would remind us of dinosaurs and then slides of other kinds of animals. There are a lot of different winged animals and different places. So I guess he was especially interested in the chickens because they are warm and have feathers, which is unusual. Birds were very interesting to him. There were all kinds of winged creatures and some of them were quite large. They must have different kinds of atmospheres. They're almost like, they almost look like fish. Big round kinds of like blowfish or something that go through the air. They must live in a very dense atmosphere. And, I guess snakes, too. Those weren't so common. There were soft fuzzies, too. There were soft fuzzies like rodents, bunnies, large ones. And he did say, too, that they were all different sizes. Most of the pictures he showed me were plants and animals. A lot of different flowers of different kinds, almost like underwater creatures. You know how different they look. It seemed like he was showing me pictures of all the different kinds of things there are. There were so many I couldn't soak them all up. I have to think if any of them really stick out to me. I think the creature that went through the air that was like a blowfish captivated my imagination. And some of the flowers because they were so exotic and beautiful. And fish. I remembered when I studied biology and looked at exotic fish, I had that same feeling. I think I saw a lot of exotic fish, but there were so many. It's as though he showed me a matter of hundreds, but I don't remember any of them very vividly. Such diversity. He kept talking about diversity, which was something that he was very interested in. Diversity. About how important biological diversity is. It's very interesting that he said that over and over again. I think that was a message for me when I grew up, because preserving diversity is the reason that we protect the endangered species, so it was like a reassuring message from him, that he, he would be a scientist, and from a scientist's point of view, they cherished the diversity and therefore they would protect it from any kind of ecological disturbance. Like from any other kind of species coming in. There was a sense of a protective quality about that, like if somebody else wanted to come here and colonize, they would protect us from having our life forms threatened because they cherish biological diversity. He talked about it with a tone of voice that it was obviously something that he was not only interested in, but something he really cherished. You know, a very deep kind of a sense of wonder, and respect about it. Almost religious quality, too. A.C. Do you have a feeling that he's still around? V.H. That he's still alive? Yes. I have the feeling that, if he wanted to come visit me, he certainly could. Yes. I have the feeling that he's old and that they live a long time and that therefore he's unlikely to be very much different from what he was then. A.C. Do you feel that there is some way that you could get in touch with him? V.H., that idea has been crossing my mind lately that I would just try. I would just assume that I could, and go about it as though I was just thinking about someone. Like you do when you want somebody to call you. And I thought I would work on that, maybe. The interesting thing is, you know, the speed at which you travel. I definitely have the feeling that they could travel fast. By fast I meant fast enough. He talked about it as though going from galaxy to galaxy were the kind of thing we talk about going from state to state or country to country. And the distances between galaxies are such that they must travel. Either they travel faster than the speed of light, or they live for tens of thousands of years. Because the distances, sometimes galaxies are millions of light years away. So they have to be able to travel faster than the speed of light or they wouldn't be able to do it in one lifetime. Unless they're literally billions of years old. I don't know. It's just that he's very old, and such a tone of voice, it's obvious he thought I couldn't understand how old was old. A.C. Did he ask you how old you were? V.H. Yes. I told him how old I was. I told him that I just started school and that I like school a lot. I liked learning new things and I remember that he picked that up and explained a lot of what he was doing in the same way. He was trying to learn new things about what our world was like. At this point, there is a short interruption as the tape has changed. When the recording resumes, Dr. Claymar has shifted the subject to Virginia's experience in France. She describes the weather of that day. Nearly 20 years earlier. V.H., it was a day like today. About this temperature, and overcast. It wasn't raining. But you wondered if it were going to. It was cool. And, fresh out. It must have been, spring or early summer, maybe June. The same time of year. As the 1950 incident, B.H., and I think it was Sunday. We had all gone for a family picnic and my brother and I took off to look at the fields, the woods and stuff. We were wandering around in the woods. And, I guess they had been looking for me. They were calling to me, and when I finally came back, I was telling them about the deer and they said, "Where were you? We were calling you." And I said, "I didn't hear you." I said, "I was with my brother," and he said, "No, you were for a while and then you weren't," and he didn't know where I was, and I said, Yes, you were right with me. He was claiming that no, he couldn't find me. I said I was right there. I wasn't far away and I was chastising him for being so thick, but of course I was much more interested in talking about the deer than I was in telling him where I was because, of course, I was just down there in the woods. And I described this deer. And the way I remember it is that the deer was looking at me and saying good, bye. The deer was saying good, bye telepathically to me. I have that as a conscious memory, the part where I am looking at the deer, and the deer is about the size of a small deer. Medium sized deer. I don't remember the name of the species of the same size, but I would suppose it was my height to the top of my head, and I was already grown up. I was 5'7" then, so maybe it was a little shorter, but it was about that tall, and it just looked at me, and it had this nice, bright, the same quality, big, bright, dark eyes shining. And it was gray, too. The deer was gray. Gray, brown. It was looking at me. The deer was looking into my eyes and saying good, bye to me. I was all excited about having been able to communicate with this deer. But when I described it, I think I just said it was a pretty deer and I didn't know how to describe their experience. But it was as though the memory that I had, it was a conscious memory of having the feeling that I was communicating with the deer, that I was in touch with it, and that it was saying good, bye to me. It was as though I was talking to it and saying, well, don't leave yet, and then, it just sort of dematerialized, disappeared. AC. Had you ever seen this deer before? VH. No, I hadn't. I'd seen deer before, but not this one. AG. Had you ever had any experience that reminded you of this one? VH. Well, as I was saying, it was as though the big eyes reminded me a little bit of the big eyes of, that the other people had. And I had a sense of a personality about this deer, but the personality was a younger personality. It seems to me, than the older man that I was dealing with the first time. It didn't seem like the same person. I don't have a feeling about whether they were related or knew each other or, I mean, I had a sense of personality about this deer. There was a person inside this deer. That's what I knew. I had a strong sense of what the personality was like, and that it wasn't the same one. It's as though there's quite a big block to remember before that farewell scene, just kind of an emotional one to me. It was as though I had a friend and I didn't want it to leave, and it said it had to go. Good, bye. But it wasn't a final good, bye. It was like until, see, you, again good, bye. AC, you keep covering your eyes, especially your right eye, touching it. How do they feel? VH. This last time, too, they felt very sensitive, as though, you know, there are very bright lights in a spaceship. I remember them as being extremely bright. The light must not have been ideal for my eyes. I don't remember it being painful, but just very bright, as though you want to shield your eyes from that bright light. Dr. Claymore and I have frequently observed this physical reek-middle-dotchen during the trance states of other abductees. Many times she had to switch off the single, low, wattage bulb she usually has burning while her subjects are undergoing hypnosis. And now, just as Virginia is attempting to break through her memory block to recall what happened before she parted from the deer, her narrative takes a sudden jog back to the 1950 incident. The episode she describes must be dealt with even though it sounds, on the face of it, outrageous. VH. As you were telling me about shifting from that one to the other one. Moving from the 1950 farmyard experience to the 1960 encounter with the deer, it seemed as though I had a memory that I finally did talk him into taking me for a ride, but he said he would just take me up and let me look at the earth. So I did that and looked at the ground. I'm trying to remember what I looked at. I think I looked at where I lived. You know, North America from outer space. And it didn't look too much like a map, you know. It was fully covered with clouds, it wasn't so clear as the globes. I expected it to look like a globe, and of course it didn't because of all the clouds, but I did look at it and I was high enough that I could see the water at the edges, and the Great Lakes. We were high. AC. What was the motion like? VH. Smooth. Like a smooth elevator. Fast. Like as though it took only about as long as it takes you to get to the top of the Empire State Building. Not over a few minutes to get high enough to see. Except it seems to me that it wasn't black out there. Most of what I was looking at was light blue, but then there was black around the edges. I don't know how high up that is. I don't know that I could see the ocean. I remember that I could see the Great Lakes, though. You could see the water and a lot of clouds. It was pretty. So he humored me that much, to see what it looked like. Though this episode is difficult to accept as literally true, we must remember that so did each new detail of each UFO report when it first came to light. In fact, in the UFO literature we do have other accounts of abductees being taken on short flights. Too logically, there is no way to reject one aspect of a report out of hand simply because it strains our credulity more than other aspects of the same report. Was Virginia's trip the recollection of an actual event or was it, perhaps, something else? An interpolated dream or an artificially induced image like the non-existent deer? Arguing for its being an interpolated fantasy, there is the particular moment when Virginia brought it up. Immediately before, she had been trying to break through a memory block about what happened prior to saying goodbye to the beautiful deer. In this and her previous session, Virginia went into long digressions just before each breakthrough, as if the imposed amnesia were struggling to maintain itself. Her account of the ride she talked her friend into just might be one of these digressions. On the other hand, her description of the trip is subtly precise. In the phrases of a 6-year-old, Virginia said, "I looked at where I lived, and it didn't look too much like a map. A child would naturally expect it to look like a globe, and to find it did not, though it was pretty." There is not only a tone of authenticity, but also a surprising accuracy to her description. It sounds to me very much like what a precocious 6-year-old might report if she had, in fact, had the experience she claims. Throughout the mass of UFO cases which have been collected over the years, there are literally thousands of instances in which the occupants on the craft almost seem to be showing off, demonstrating their capabilities before the astonished eyes of fighter pilots, radar operators, civilian motorists, and even astronomers. 3. A certain theatricality flavors this behavior, and I have alluded earlier to the theory that they may be slowly, methodically, raising our consciousness about their very existence. Perhaps Virginia's trip, which, according to her, took mere seconds, was more than just a favor granted a cooperative and intelligent 6-year-old. It may have been just one more technological demonstration, but one that was tucked away for 30 years until its revelation through hypnosis. As the reader must know by now, the patterns of UFO behavior are a great deal clearer than their meaning. And now, after another digression on the subject of her myopia, Virginia returns to the incident in the Alsatian Woods. VH, the deer. That pretty deer that I was so fond of. It was like my best, long, lost friend. I didn't want him to go away. He said he had to. I think he said he'd see me again. He had to leave. It was a person. It was a friend, and I don't, I'm describing it as though it was a mystical experience, but it didn't feel that way. It felt like it was a good, good friend that I didn't want not to see anymore. How I found him and how the communication happened I can't remember. There's a block, out. I can think better when I cover my eyes because the light is, I can see it through my eyelids. At this point, the session is interrupted so Aphrodite can switch off the single office light. 7, The deer. Where does the deer come from? I don't know. Maybe I can just sort of walk around in my mind and get around it. It's as though I can't remember how I found the deer except I sure knew him and I sure communicated with him, and I sure didn't want him to leave, and it wasn't a sad thing. It was like such an excitement, It was as though you bump into a friend you haven't seen for a long time whom you really like, and you've lost their address. And you were so glad you found them.